Nardis woodpecker.
DeWalt.
Oh, yeah. This guy's adopted the farmhouse. First he adopted the truck of joy. Then he adopted Rebecca's truck of night. Then he adopted the Bahamobile by pooping on all of our doors and landing on our rearview mirrors. And then he's been landing on the laundry room window.
Always doing that again.
Looking at his reflection in the window, and Narda took a video of him yesterday doing this. And right as we ended our OMS, he landed on Bog's roof cover porch right here and looked right in the window at me.
He doesn't want to be a woodpecker anymore.
He started pecking at 6:30 sharp.
Like, oh, right outside Narda's.
Perfect.
You guys got a woodpecker at Haven?
Comes around. Yeah, he lands on the old chimney. Which is especially loud. It sounds like a jackhammer.
That's fun. Yeah.
We have one that goes on the metal roof tool shed. The little tool overhang right outside the kitchen.
Naturally. Wow.
Chachi's like, goodness.
It's a woodpecker. It's a woodpecker. Oh.
He's showing us what not to do.
Yeah.
Between him and the fly and the sirens, it was all a great, perfect opportunity to put everything into practice that you were talking about.
Yeah. We hit it all into the spine.
Wow, were there sirens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know
that. Really loud.
During the talk?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right on cue, like.
Yeah, wow, that oppositional force. Been active. Mm-hmm. Been an active little guy.
Mm-hmm. I posted on Nextdoor asking about the noises last night, and somebody liked it because they probably wanted to know too, and then only one response, and they said, fireworks on the res.
Oh,
which makes sense because it was like to like cross
sense.
The water. Because there was like a higher one, like, and there was one that was like, boom, like,
yeah.
It was so consistent for like 30 minutes or something.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, it did sound like fireworks. Peony's like, that sounds like fireworks. I'm like, there's nobody doing fireworks right now.
It's April 18th. I look it up. I'm like, April 18th holiday.
April.
That makes a lot of sense.
There were some coyotes last night too, right? The blue went out at like 1 o'clock or something.
Hazel.
Oh.
She did a good job.
Good Hazel.
Wow.
Hazel.
Get her out there. Put her in the game. Right now she thinks life is all smuggling snacks. Just sneaking snacks any avenue she has. And awkwardly going potty in front of everyone. But actually you have a job, Hazel.
Gosh, it sounds just like Leo.
You're very similar.
You're part of the whole, Hazel.
As her blue.
Yeah.
Just wants to do
up.
The right
just
thing.
Get your confidence
you can
up.
Do it, Ezra. I mean, blue. I mean, Ezra.
You can jump into that truck.
I just can't. I'm not good. I know I'm not good. I'll try. I tried once when I was 3. I'll never do it again.
Good blue.
I wanted to share some. Phil, I tend to share the context of the time of David's reading, and that December 15th is when he had this surgery for stage 4 cancer. So that was...
Oh, April?
December.
Oh, December. Okay.
December 15th is when he had the first surgery, and they felt like they got everything, but around April of 2016, it had moved to his liver. And so we went to University of Washington, and he had that removed. And so, and then he was clean for 3 years. Mm. But it was during that time.
Oh, during these readings.
During these readings, the April one is, I can't remember what the exact date, but I know, I'm sure it was in April that he had the second surgery.
Mm. Wow.
And also, what also comes to mind is that I think it was from probably sometime in the middle of summer, maybe, of 2014 to the middle of summer of 2015, he's talked about, and Rebecca may have more of the date, but it was a year that he said that death was at his doorstep. And I remember asking him, what's going on, and he just said, death is at my doorstep. He said, I don't really feel like that I'm going to leave physically, but he said it went on for a year, and around the middle of the summer of 2014, he said, it's finished, or whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
But he talked about that because I was like, what does that mean, really? And then 6 months later, and then he was diagnosed, and then in April. But that's, I feel like I'm going to share the context of what was going on physically for him. And then God said, gave 3 more years of clean, no cancer. So.
Yeah, it reminds me just where we started the talk today with that oppositional force. And that's certainly, for a number of us, has been very in the air this week and very strong in ourselves too. And I've been witness to it. But just for us to, what it has helped me be clear about is the oppositional force has always been a gift to me. Because it's created more clarity of purpose and more willingness to step into exactly what God's calling me to do. And it's like you need that thing to push against to choose it. Because as an idea, we all just want God realization. It's great. Like, sure. But when the oppositional force starts knocking at your door, then you have no choice except to surrender this idea of yourself and step into what God is asking of you. So I think even for him saying that death is at your door, you know, for all of us, the concept of death is very personal, not even just physical death, but the idea of how death manifests in our life and how aspects of ourselves need to die, qualities of our life need to die, things and habits that we've done need to die, relationships will die, not, and then also including death and the passing of, the passing on from this plane, but how all, how that is such a natural part of life that we avoid facing, and we don't want to believe in it. But the reality is it's just as much a part of life as life, and that it's inevitable that things pass and move on, and that there is actually a great joy in it because it always brings about the rebirth of something. And when we learn to look at the rhythm of it, we can face that oppositional force, that kind of death quality that's coming in, with trust and allow it to move and become what it needs to be. But that isn't to sugarcoat the challenge of it, because it often represents something in ourself that has to die, and it's a painful process, especially if we haven't faced it before. And so we've been avoiding this exact thing, and now it's at the door, and we have to face it now. And I think just in my own relationships, I'll just speak for myself. In the last week, I've been having the things come up where that oppositional force is trying to get in, and it's trying to come towards the ashram, and it's wanting to come in as an ego. It's wanting to come in promoting itself and wanting to come in to fix me or us. And I look at it and I think, is there any truth to what this is saying? And there isn't. And I don't need to get swept up into being confused about that anymore, because I've already done years of that tapasya, years of having to analyze every single thing in myself and the intentions I have and why is this happening. At this stage, that opposing force knocks on the door, and I think, all right, Ram, you just show me what to do, and let's do it. And it has become a process of expanding my own aura, of the ashram expanding its aura. When that kind of opposing force comes at us, that means we have to get big in God. And so I see that always reflected in nature. This is what I, from the very beginning of this farm, God has confirmed and taught me through what's going on with the nature around the farm. And so when the ravens start showing up this week, I notice it immediately. I both want to be friends with that raven, and I see this is a dark bird. This is not normal. I've never had a raven show up like this. Just every day, perpetual raven diving in the chicken yard, but not even just the chicken yard, flying over us in the valley all day and announcing himself all day. Now, he's not bad. He's a raven. You know, he has his own consciousness. Doug in the mountains, best friends were the ravens. So I don't have a bad connotation, but he's a dark bird, and he doesn't usually live here, and he wants the chicken scraps, and he's setting the chicken alarm off. And for me, these are just signs. Like, okay, that's that force. That's that woodpecker pecking at the door, and like, it's that oppositional force is showing up. And I think for all of us, it's just like when these things are happening, that's our opportunity to pay attention. Like, what's going on right now inside of me that's needing to be overcome? Probably something in myself that needs to die and be reborn and transfigured. And what was the language Aoife Bell used? The holy readjustment. I really like that language. That resonated with me a lot. But I think that we see in ourselves, it's just, this is the continuous process of our spiritual life, and it just never ends. It's infinity. So as much as we expand into God is as much as we'll take on in God, and as much as we will have to face all the other aspects of living in this plane. But it doesn't mean we have to suffer them personally in that way, but it does mean that we see them for what they are, and we uphold that which is right and true in our own life in every way, and we don't compromise anything anymore. Like the dream that I shared, I felt that was me being shown, like, don't hold back any part of yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't distract yourself in any way from God's presence. Mm-hmm. And it's like even something as innocent as, like, I'm just going to check the news right now. I'm going to check the score of this game. If I do that without God, that's the darkness. That's the oppositional force waking up, and I'm giving it space to come in and take more, have more of a presence in myself. But there's a way to do those things gracefully and with God still. It's not like anything of itself is just wrong. It's just how willing am I to do it with God versus how much am I doing it for my little sense of self. So I think that it's just been amazing to me. I'm so grateful that we can have these conversations as a group of people who share the spiritual life together, because it makes our conversations on Sunday aren't abstract at all. Mm-hmm. We're not going into a church just hoping that the minister is going to throw a dart in the dark and hit the bullseye. Like, it's actually our life, and it just is what it is. We don't have to make it up. I don't have to think about the talk. I don't have to make it up. It's just what's there, what's going on right now. What is today? What is this moment? And it's very interesting that you referenced, like, I wasn't thinking about that aspect of with David, but how much that's a part of this moment too. 10 years, and how much that's just a part of exactly right now. Mm. And I think probably something you would be more aware of and sensitive to, how much that maybe you're feeling that right now. And I think maybe we wouldn't have that conscious awareness, but be feeling the same feeling in our own way and with our own avenue of understanding it. So in that way, you see, we're not even separate. These realities aren't separate at all. And we just are all actually growing in the spirit as one. And that's the greatest gift of just being able to sit in this space. And that's also why it's just not for everyone. If you don't have faith in that and don't believe in that, then it's not going to be a comfortable space to sit. But if this feeds you, then you know. And I think it's right for everybody that it's right for. Thank you, Carla, for sharing that, though, your personal remembrance of that time. And yeah, I was very called towards those readings specifically. So, I mean, there's April readings from every posting, so it could have been any of them. None of them were like these ones, though.
Mm-hmm. The two things. Thank you for sharing your dream, because I have something I'm working through too, and that was so helpful to have that God remembrance before, of like, oh, is this going to bring me closer to God? Is there a purpose in God? And that's like such a good test, you know, self-test. And then I found it interesting how this kind of like being watchful and paying attention. I was reading in a book last night, and it was like sentence after sentence about being watchful and like attending. Like, I mean, in the book it called it sobriety, but like when I looked up, like, what is that? Why is that they're using this word sobriety? And like in the actual definition of it in the Greek is watchfulness, like being watching and not forgetting. But it answered the question that I had, which is just like one of the things that I think I'm struggling with in sadhana is a result of not being watchful during the day. Mm-hmm. and then it's hard to stay focused when you have no none of the activities and just slipping away. And so that's maybe something to work on.
Yeah, good that you can identify that.
Yeah, it might be a little piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah, the first step to our sadhana getting deeper is realizing our sadhana needs to get deeper.
Yeah.
It's really like not rocket science, but it's not easy either. You have to be really serious and like want that for yourself. And it's generally not until we kind of get drunk on something, we lose our sobriety, that we realize how essential it is that we focus and that we give ourselves back over to God. And we realize we can't do it of ourselves. Like, it has to come through surrender. It has to come through really, really making love to God. You know, Peony opened with door of my heart, and if I've said it once, I'll say it 1,000 times. It really doesn't matter what state we're in and where our struggles are, how great we're doing. Like, door of my heart is always the answer. Mm-hmm. And I feel Master's just always calling us with that chant to just get back to the simplicity of opening our heart to God. And when we do it and we feel the door open, everything just falls away and nothing matters anyways. Like, it's just, and then we can take our steps from the right place again. Mm-hmm. And the outside can come to match the inside. But it's really that, it's really making that choice and realizing the need. My one duty to God is to keep my heart open to God's love all the time and to keep giving myself all the time. You know, that can sound like, you know, if you get into the Orthodox Fathers, which we both are, that can sound like such a dire and drastic and extreme thing. Their language is just so intense, and their suffering mm-hmm. that they take on to do it is just so extreme. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of that that even appeals to me. And yet, I don't fall for that anymore, because mm-hmm. that doesn't actually help me love God more. Mm-hmm. To feel like I'm this great sinner that mm-hmm. needs all that has no hope. Like, it's like, no, all the hope is here. It's mm-hmm. God, though, and I know it, and God is here. So, mm-hmm. to give myself permission to not have to take on the weight
yeah.
of that relationship. And yesterday I visited Mother Thecla with Narda. And then I asked her, "Have you seen the new Moses the Black movie?" Mm. And that's like a kind of a creative reenactment of Moses the Black of Egypt. He was Ethiopian. And he was a Black Orthodox saint, which you can imagine hundreds and hundreds of years ago was very controversial, but very humble. But I read his story, and you know, so much of it is just about his own his own inadequacy, even to the point of like people calling him Black on the inside and the outside, and him saying that about himself. Mm. And like being Black was such a bad thing. It's like us identifying the raven as being Black, making the raven evil or something. And it's like, let's not go there. Mm. And he, even Moses, saying that about himself. Mm. And it's like, we just don't need to go there. Mm-hmm. We need to open our heart. Like, mm-hmm. and I feel like we can bypass a lot of the need mm-hmm. for what was overcoming a Kali Yuga understanding of mm-hmm. the path, the need to blast ourselves into oblivion in order to love God mm-hmm. goes away if we would just love God. Mm-hmm. And I just again think of John, Christ's disciple, and he just wasn't focused on every problem and everything that was wrong with everything. He was focused on loving Christ. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't have the same journey as the other ones, because he was only focused on love. Mm. So like when I got this book, I got a book from Mother Thecla yesterday, the Philokalia, which for those of you who've read Way of the Pilgrim, it's what the pilgrim is reading when he's walking around everywhere. Bhima got the same book at the bookstore in Anacortes. We did not plan this. We both are familiar with the Philokalia, but this one is the Prayers of the Heart one. So I'm thinking like, cool, I'd like to see what their devotion sounds like. And then Mother Thecla tells me, like, when I got this book, Father Isaac told me start at this point. And she opened it up and she's like, this one. And I was like, it's like Hezekiel. Is that it? Something like
Hezekias.
And it's like part two, page 260 or something. So last night I sat down in my chair and opened it up, and it's like 150 points of sobriety. And my God, I read like four of them, and I thought, I'm just gonna love you, God. I'm just gonna love you now. Like, and then Beam was like, well, this really resonates with me, and like sent me the message, like, I'm reading and I love it. And I was like, God bless you, Beam. Like, I'm gonna think about loving God, because I got nothing. Like, I can't read that stuff anymore. Like, maybe at a point when I needed to convince myself that I could love God and that God did love me, maybe that had its place. But now I have felt God's love, and I know my task is to give my love to God. So I don't really have anywhere else to go. Like, 150 points on staying sober is crazy to me. Like, but, you know, it's not to knock anybody who that is benefiting and that has its place. It's mm-hmm. The orthodoxies of the church and the dogmas that are creative are to help us overcome ourselves.
Yeah.
And the degree to which we're still attached to being these little delusional selves, we need it. You know, we need a dogma. We need to hold on to something. You know, Boggs and I got reamed by a Franciscan brother at Laverna because we weren't Catholic, and he gave us communion. And my God, he was ready to kick us out, but I ended up, was able to give him a big, giant hug and tell him I loved him, and it was all good. And we were all going up the same mountain, and if we get high enough up the mountain, our view becomes the same.
Yeah.
And right now, if we're looking at each other from our own little perches along the way, we think you're wrong, and this is the right trail up the mountain. But you get high enough and you think, oh, we're all going to the same place, it's all good. So I didn't feel any upsets at him. He was certainly upset with us.
Then the next day you brought some farm things, or you were trying to figure out how to get it to him. And then I think you found like a nun who like looked bright.
Oh, she was super happy about it. It was probably for her. It was probably for her.
Yeah.
She was so sweet and guileless. She was like, yes, yes. Definitely. I gave him the farm newsletter. We're going to let him go down in this little flaming dogma of sectarianism. Like, I'm still going to be your friend, buddy. Yeah. You know, let God guide opening that book up. I thought God was guiding me to open it up through Mother Thecla, to open it up to that point. So I was glad to open it up to that point. And then I did, and I thought, God, this isn't for me. That's what I needed. Just remember, keep it simple.
Zach, I've been wondering if you could talk more about expanding our aura. Since we talked yesterday, I found in myself, in trying to tune into that, hit some limitation of just feeling consciousness of like littleness and being limited.
Mm-hmm.
And how what are the simple steps toward that expansion, and what does that feel like?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good question. Yeah, you know, the last thing we want to do is become those spiritual types that run around promoting our own aura and trying to help people because we're so great. And that's kind of the connotation of those things. Like, a lot of people who are relating in that way are relating from a pretty off place, but it's a step. So, but I think for us, the simple way of relating to it is expanding in our self-forgetfulness of our positive direction and the joy of our service together and what we're doing. And I found time and again that when these kind of oppositional forces start to wake up and they're prodding at me and it's like they're demanding my attention and they're like making me face them, that there can be a moment where I need to face them and I need to acknowledge it, but that's not the solution. The solution is getting clear about the positive direction and going full steam ahead with what's right and true. And so, like, even in this moment, what I found is, like, any of the opposition that we've encountered, like with the Grange, and just the feeling of like, ooh, that doesn't feel that good, like they're not even open to being together in the spirit, and us having to kind of face that. But it's like, well, what is the positive direction? It's like, it's just to show up to the Grange 150% and to bring even more and to do even more and to have even radiate even more loving kindness and to do whatever we need to do to be ready for that. It's like every day is just, here is so wonderful because it's just doing all the things that we do with God. And it doesn't have to be abstract. It's like just bringing God into everything that we're doing more and better. And so I think about that, like, even yesterday we came across like a flyer that was from this other group on the island, and they're marketing all the things happening at the Grange as their things, including the farmer's market, and they don't want to do the farmer's market. And at first that had a very like off-putting feeling for me of like, ugh. Like, we were trying to not even attach our own name to the market, trying to call it the South Camino Grange Farmers Market. And now here this other group is, and they're like calling it theirs. And I thought, like, that's not fun at all. That doesn't feel good at all. But then when I actually just tuned into, like, well, what does that mean? It's like, It means we get to show up and just be about that life. We don't need to even engage with it. That it actually is delusion. It's nothing. And it doesn't. And to give it any energy would actually be a disservice to our own ability to expand our aura. We expand our aura by just like becoming that fully. And I think in when we have compassion, we see that, you know, maybe they are just feeling like they wish they could be doing this. And they're relating to it from their own point of understanding and relating and even projecting selfishness on us. And that's often what we come up against is the projection of other people's egoic understanding on our own. And it's easy to fall into that trap ourselves, that we start to respond from our own, that same place. But really, when we just say, actually, that's God just kind of like being the woodpecker right now. And our solution isn't to be upset at the woodpecker. It's actually just to say, okay, Woody's doing his thing. But like, I need to be even more focused on what God's giving me to do today. And bringing God into that even more. And I found time and again, like, the opposing force for this place has been so amazing and so beneficial, because this place had to be created amidst a church that inherently was anti-supportive to the mission of this place. Yeah. Like, it's not personal to me. Like, I'm not mad at these people, but like, they actually were anti-supportive. So to the point of like, if I would try to schedule an event here on a Saturday, it would be very controversial. Why aren't you at our event at our church on Saturday? And it's like, well, we're on Kameno. Like, we're supposed to serve Kameno. And it would just make me have to go inside and say, what's going on? Am I just crazy? Like, should I just be only at this place on Saturdays and not trying to do things on Kameno at all? And I'd go inside and I'd be like, no, I have to expand the aura of the farm. I'm not put on Kameno to be in Bothell. I'm put on Kameno to do what I've been given to do here. And I can own that and I can expand into that. And so doing that created a natural kind of friction with the other consciousness and a non-acceptance of what this place was. But I had so much peace in myself because I had faced it inside of myself and known my own truth, that my job is to identify the positive direction and to go full steam ahead as long as I know it. If I don't know it, that's okay. Slow down. Do not force it. Slow down and get clear about the positive direction and take the steps. But generally, the blessing that we have is there is always some positive thing any one of us can do at any moment that is very grounded. And to go step into it with God is just like, it's such a gift, because this world isn't a grounded place. People are living in their heads and they're floating from point A to point F to point M, and I've been there. And always chasing a desire or following a habit and an attachment without any real clarity about what the positive direction even is. And so for us, I think all of those things serve as kind of wake-ups to like, no, but I am clear. I don't have to take on that confusion. I do know where I'm at. I do know what I'm doing. And it's bringing God into these things. And so I find that our aura naturally expands the more clear we are in ourselves about who we are and what we're doing for God. And that will both draw kind of a repulsion of consciousness, in the same way Christ had to be crucified, in the same way every saint has to be rejected at times, in the same way all goodness has to be rejected at times. But it also will bring to it so much goodness. And I've learned if we just stay focused on the goodness and not getting sucked into anything that's wrong, is perceived as being wrong, I bet you a good amount of people are going to show up at the Grange to see us. And we're going to be able to send people home with plants and happiness and friendship. And it's going to be good. Most likely. You know, you never want to try to set expectations or figure it all out for God. But my feeling is what always works is if I just stay focused on what's true and what is mine to do today. And so anytime the opposing force comes in, it's always this force trying to take me away from that. Mm. And that's where it's like, just have to get bigger in my own aura where that can't get in there. Woody can knock all day long. It's fine. I feel a little bit like when I didn't know the ambulance or whatever was going off at all during the thing. I feel like God just wouldn't let me think about it. It's just like when we're in our clear space, we don't have to worry about these things anymore. We don't have to carry those burdens. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I think such a joy of it is just realizing that the solution is always identifying the positive direction. And it helps us avoid endless labyrinths of confusion, because we spend a lot of time, understandably, on the path going into the labyrinths of why something is the way it is and trying to figure it out and what have I done wrong and what's wrong with me or what's wrong with this person. And it's, and in a microcosmic reality, it has its place. We have to be willing to face it. But the way that we overcome it is by identifying the positive direction and becoming that. It's not by stewing in it forever. And we know that because we've all stewed enough. When our stew is very well cooked, our potatoes are mush. We don't need to cook the stew anymore. We need to identify the positive direction every time something comes up. Every oppositional force that arises in us, it's okay. We identify it and we say, what's the positive direction of this? Sometimes it's simply just to say, whoosh, whoosh, get off, and you brush our shoulders off, and there's no space for it anymore because our aura just rejects it, and we don't need to go into it anymore. Other times it still has some power on us, and we have to see that we haven't overcome this yet, so it has some power, and we're going to now really make it our steadfast commitment to give it to God. And to really go through that process with God. And God will always give you the positive steps to overcome it when we give it away. It's only when we hold on to it and think that it's our own that we can't figure that. We can't crack the dang code. We can't figure out what am I supposed to do because we think it's ours to do. We got to get back into that God space first. Yeah. And He helps us.
Yeah.
He's got compassion for us, infinite compassion for us. I've seen that time and again. But he doesn't always give me what I want when I want it. He sometimes makes me earn it. Last night we were sitting in bed meditating and I was just, you know, having my inner dialogue with God about wanting to see his light. And I was staring at the candle that was burning on the altar while having this conversation about wanting to see his light. And just really, sometimes I'll do a candle meditation and just stare at it. And I'll be darned if that candle didn't just go right when I asked for it. And I thought, you are so silly. Like, at a time that could have had an effect on me. Like, what's God saying to me? Not anymore. I don't doubt God like that. God is here. God loves me. We're his children. God loves all of us. And he's just trying to get us to relax into our positive direction and have the gumption to take our darn steps. So it went out last night and I watched the ember of it. It was like a little light and it just kept fading and fading. And I'm like, you better relight that thing. You better relight that thing. And then it just goes out. And I said, you would do that. And then I just closed my eyes and went into meditation. And it was like, he was just taking me inside. So he's like, don't look at the candle. It wasn't a correction. It was joy, actually. And I felt the joy of it. And it was like, because I was relating to God and not myself, that candle snuffing actually gave me joy, not some mm-hmm. kind of like idea that something is wrong. Mm-hmm. That's probably fun for you because you were sitting right there, and we never talked about it, obviously. Did you notice it?
It glowed for a long time.
Yeah.
Wondering about sharing the letter. Hard to Prakash.
Sharing it with everyone.
If you think it's a good thing.
Huh? I wouldn't have thought about it myself, but I trust that if you feel compelled to do that, that I'm supportive. Would you want to just talk to everyone?
Not really.
You don't have to.
You wanted to read it, I would be okay with that.
Read your letter?
You don't have to.
Probably it's
okay,
not,
I'll just
not
let
mine
it go.
To do. Yeah.
I'm gonna let it go.
But I think you could tune into if there's something you did feel called to share with everyone. And it can be simple in God. That you would do that.
You might notice the new door.
Yeah.
Yes. Might just share a little bit about how that came about. And, thanks. I think there's like two different reasons. One, the external reason was I used to get bothered by the sounds of the house. And then the other reason was I wanted a better door so I could hide in the room better when I wanted to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And when I didn't want people to like hear me cry or like say stupid things. I guess that's why. But it's a really nice door, so thanks.
Paul installed it yesterday and worked on it and mortised the little door handle into it and made it a reality.
It's really nice having wood.
Yeah, it is.
So thanks for picking it up and working on it, both of you.
Yeah.
It's not personal, the sounds, but it's directed at a couple of people, so they know who they are.
Yeah, I think for me, I've been in this house and in this room so long with so many people around that I just had to put my headphones on and just learn how to turn everything off like a switch and not think about everything that's passing by. That with those windows and 60s. These doors.
Yeah.
I've like shared my room with people before and they're like, God, there's a lot of energy in this room. Like I know, yeah, really, it's a constant practice to just like hold your peace in the space of that room, but it's a lot of energy that can go up.
Yeah.
So I really value it. I feel like with the door, I just wasn't, Tony would ask me at different points of it happening, like what I thought, I'm like, just washing. I got nothing. Like, I'm happy to have the door. But I also, I'm fine. Either way.
Yeah. Hopefully, just. Yeah. Good. Either way.
Yeah.
Just like the ticking clock, it used to really bother me, and probably still will. But.
Does that one too?
It does.
Wow.
I ordered two new ones that
we can transcend that thing.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. You ordered two new ones.
that were advertised as being silent.
Mm.
But they're very loud. But I know, I've just made it a practice, like, recently to actually notice when I hear it, I'm actually in the moment, and when I don't, I'm, like, lost in other realms. So in a way, it's sort of helpful, but...
It's like a stage of internalizing.
Yeah.
First you have to hear the clock.
Yeah.
And then you have to turn the clock off.
Yeah.
And then you're internalized.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
Jenny, I'm remembering the story of Dr. George had like 100 clocks all around his room. And they were all just tick, 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 tick. And somebody, I don't think people would ask him, like, why. But, like, later on they'd think about it and they would think, I think it was because he was reminding us how little time we have to realize God. And he always had to remind me. This is such a strange one. Made me think of that.
Sure, discourage me from ordering anything again, especially from China.
Yeah. Who knows? Of TikTok.
TikTok.
TikTok. Oh man.
Guess talk. Clocks just want to take.
Take us off.
Maybe a digital clock.
I feel like it's actually okay. I feel like we could, in ourselves, overcome the tick. I believe in you guys.
We had two silent clocks. One, the first Carla gave us on the wall, if you remember. And it started being really loud after like a month. And then the second one that was here was also silent for a little while, and then it just like clicked, like every second it was like six clicks or something. So
well, I've never noticed any of the
clicks
yet.
You had that clock for years and it never made a sound.
I specifically bought it. It was in the kitchen. made a noise.
Never made a
sound
until it came here.
Everything gets louder when you try to meditate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe,
Like in a kitchen, it's like those kind of sounds too are just not that prevalent, but in a silent space, it's amazing how everything takes on new dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned to relate to most sounds like that, and I use headphones just because that's like a helpful conduit for me to internalize myself and not be thinking on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But you can not use headphones and internalize too. It's I feel like that's kind of the same opposing force we're talking about, is teaching us to overcome these things on the inside and not need to constantly look to change it. But also, I'm just watching again, so like whatever clocks things happen next, I'm generally fine with. But I would say the digital one, I wouldn't be that inspired myself with the digital aesthetic.
Yeah.
I feel like that would actually probably bother me more than this.
Well, I almost stood up as soon as I sat down to meditate and I heard the woodpecker. I almost got up, and what I do with the woodpecker in our house, I just like clapping flies off. But then I thought, that's probably even more disturbing. And I just got here, so I don't really have a leg to stand on.
They've probably been sitting here with Woody for a half hour.
So, and then when you talked about it as opposing force, I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
I did try. I got up and I ran to the truck of joy and got the owl.
The dog sparked the owl last night.
Thinking
I showed them the owl. We were still like, I'm not going.
Where is the owl?
Oh gosh.
I don't care.
Oh no.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. I had no idea. I think that's why he came at the end and landed on Bog's porch right here. And was like, and then looked right at me. Yeah. He's just like, hello, friend.
Another owl on there.
I just kept thinking it was like knocking, like, can I come in?
Yeah.
That's a nice thought, yeah.
It's like, you gotta come in the front.
Front door.
Yeah.
I think back to Rebecca's question, which is such a really good one, is like, just making sure we're not getting swept up in to the opposing force actually does expand our aura, because the opposing force represents more Shakti and more of God coming into a situation. They go hand in hand. It's just like anytime we arise, the force is going to rise with it in meditation too. And to recognize that, like, the opposing forces coming are really representing God coming, and it represents us making that choice and rising with God. So it's like just not giving energy to the darkness and emphasizing the light, is that's our task. And it's to spiritualize the event, the experience, all of it, and that is what expands our aura. And it's just like, so we don't have to think about it as like I'm expanding my aura. We think about it as like finding God as the woodpecker, finding God as the raven coming, finding God as these other forces that are kind of causing turmoil or something, finding the God and rising up to meet it in God. And there's a great joy in it, and it's like a great release will happen. And I know you have all had to experience this in some way, whether you know it or not, that when something comes up in yourself that's hard and difficult, and when you reach that threshold and you release it, you rise. And it rises in your spine, and it rises in your communion, it rises in your sense of self, and you expand. And it is an amazing thing. And the only reason it was possible is because that opposing force came and got in your face, and it made you look at it and say, God, Christ, Guru. And it has no legs to stand on. The opposing force doesn't have any real power other than what we give it. And as long as we know that, we don't get swept up into it anymore. But we are bound to forget. It's infinitely ingenious in its ways of relating to us and pulling us back into its traps. But I think we don't need to. We can know, and as soon as we catch ourselves, we can know that focusing on God, focusing on service, focusing on taking our steps, meditation and sadhana, universal loving service, like, just keep it simple. And you do that. I watch you do that. And you come in the house and you start making the coffee and you start making the breakfast if nobody's done it. And you've already been at the chickens doing the chickens. I think it's just a matter of trusting what you're doing and realizing God's doing it already. And a lot of these things just fall away like a thief in the night. They're gone. And I think when we get more experience doing it over and over again, we become more proficient at it because we just know God can do anything in any moment. The only block is our own knowing that that's what's happening already. So sorry to double back, but I think that's really, you've arrived at the real theme of the day with that question, and I really have been thinking about that a lot myself. It's like another beautiful day. Mm-hmm. Jean comes tomorrow. Kind of incredible.
Yeah. Wow.